pills can be forgotten. Condoms have an 18% failure rate. You can get pregnant during your period, and research shows that 75% of 17 to 25-year-olds have had sex without the use of contraception. I'm Jess Redden, and I'm a newly qualified pharmacist. I'm passionate about young people empowering themselves with the right medical information they need to make the right decisions for their contraceptive and sexual health. In this four-part series, My Contraception and Sexual Health, supported by Bayer, I talk to four healthcare professionals to learn and to share with you what we need to know about our hormones, sexual health, and contraceptive options as young adults. Contraception hands us our sexual freedom, provided we know how our bodies work. Choose the right contraceptive option to match our needs and protect ourselves from sexually transmitted infections, which is why we created this series, and you can find further information on mycontraception.ie. The opinions shared in this podcast are those of the individual healthcare professionals and are intended as general information only. It is not intended to replace a consultation with a healthcare professional, nor is it intended to provide specific medical advice. Always speak to your doctor or nurse for personal medical advice. In the final episode of the series, I'm joined by nurse Anne Moriarty to understand the symptoms, causes, types, treatments, and prevention of sexually transmitted infections. To protect our sexual health, we need to know more, talk more, and take control more. We hope the information here can help remove any taboo around this topic and to empower you to own your sexual health. Hello, and thank you for joining us. My name is Jess Redden. I'm a newly qualified pharmacist, and today I'm delighted to be joined by nurse Anne Moriarty. Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Anne, on the topic of sexually transmitted infections. I'd like to start by asking you, what are the most common forms of STIs that you would see in the clinic?
Well, thanks very much for having me. I'm delighted to be here. The commonest things that we would see would be chlamydia and gonorrhea, which are both bacterial, and then herpes simplex virus, which is a virus. So that's cold sores in the genital area.
And then how do you know if you have an STI? What would some of the common signs and symptoms look like?
Well, unfortunately, you might never know, because for a lot of the time, you mightn't have any symptoms, and women are less likely to show symptoms than men. So sometimes by the time women present, maybe the infection can have been there for some time, and it may have progressed up through their genitourinary tract. So the commonest symptom would be a discharge of liquid from the vagina, the penis. Now, there should be nothing coming out of the penis except when some fellas coming or going. So if there's anybody out there with something dripping away into their boxers, they have a problem. They need to get that sorted. But because women have a discharge from their vagina all of the time, depending on what stage they are in their menstrual cycle, we have a discharge. So we need to be aware of what the discharge is like and become familiar with the changes as we proceed through our menstrual cycle. So besides that, then the discharge could be thick or white or cloudy or green or yellow or smelly or any combination of those things. And if you're sexually active, that would be the commonest symptom. We'd also see things like pain or burning when you pee or pee more than usual, but that could be because you have a kidney infection. Maybe if you're a woman, it's because you're pregnant. So more specifically, but much less commonly, would be things like an itch, rash, lumps, bumps, ulcers or sores on or around the genital area. So it's very important that we all know what's normal for us. So I'd advise everybody to examine their genital area. Now that's okay for the lads because they just look down and it's all hanging out. It's not rocket science. But for the girls, they need to go into their bedroom or bathroom, lock the door, bring their mirror and have a look and see what's there. Because if you know what's normal, then when something abnormal arises, then at least you know, well, hey, this isn't right, and I need to go and do something about it.
Okay, thank you so much for that. And then in terms of catching an STI, what are some of the common ways that people can catch STIs?
Okay, well, the only way you can catch an STI is through having sex. Okay, that's why it's called a sexually transmitted infection. Semen, vaginal fluid and blood will all carry the infection. So if you come in contact with these fluids orally, vaginally or anally, then there is a risk of infection being transmitted. And I know there's the myths out there, you know, the toilet seats, the towels, you know, the swimming pools, jacuzzi, saunas. You're not going to catch an STI from any of those things.
Perfect. Thank you for clearing that up. And then what can happen if an STI is not treated?
So if the STI isn't treated, it might not go away. Okay, so the problem is that maybe the wart will disappear, maybe the discharge will stop. But as long as you've got the infection, you can damage your own health. You can pass the infection on to your partner and damage their health. And ultimately, if you're pregnant, you may pass the infection on to the baby during the pregnancy or at the time of birth. So it is really important that people go and get tested regularly.
So what should someone do if they think that they have one?
Okay, so if they think they have an STI, the important thing is that they don't have any more sex, okay? You don't have sex until you're tested and treated. And you go and see your local STI clinic or your GP, and you wait until you've been tested and given the all clear before you resume sex again.
Okay, and then, so what happens at an STI clinic?
Okay, so that's always a big question, and people have all sorts of ideas that we come at you with medieval instruments of torture to extract pieces of flesh out of your body. It's not a thing like that. I mean, the worst thing about coming to an STI clinic is that you have to maybe flash your genitals at some complete stranger, but you know, that's the worst of it. What usually happens is you need to make an appointment. We don't have drop-in services. So you make an appointment either through the SwiftQ portal on the website, or you send an email if you're symptomatic, and then it will be decided how quickly it is that you could be seen. And when you attend the clinic, then you will see your register, you will see the doctor, you will see the health advisor. If you're attending our young person's clinic, you will see the counsellor, and you have your bloods taken. If you have no symptoms, you can take your own swabs, where we swab the vagina for chlamydia and gonorrhea, or a urine sample for men for chlamydia and gonorrhea. So the main things that we're testing for are chlamydia, gonorrhea, and then blood tests for HIV, hepatitis, and syphilis. So they are the things that we look for. If you're symptomatic, if you have a symptom of something, say it's genital herpes and you've cold sores in the genital area, well, then they will want to examine it, take swabs from the cold sores themselves so that they can actually make a diagnosis, or if you have warts. So asymptomatic screening, you do your own swabbing. If you have symptoms, then a visual examination is required. Okay, and it only takes...
That's really interesting. I didn't know myself that you had to make an appointment. I just thought there would be, you know, some sort of a walk-in clinic available. So you do have to make an appointment. There's resources out there that you can book in. Perfect.
COVID has changed a lot, Jess, and some ways in a good way, because we used to have drop-in clinics and people would be queuing for hours. You know, when you actually come to the clinic from start to finish to see the doctor, you know, it should really be about 30 to 45 minutes if it's seamless as you go from one healthcare professional to the other. When we had the drop-in services, you'd have people waiting for ages. Everybody arrived when the clinic opened, or they'd arrive even before the clinic opened, so there'd be queues. So with COVID, we haven't been able to do that. And in a way, that's good, because it is more streamlined and it's less stressful for people, and they're not sitting in a crowded waiting room for ages. Okay. However, the fact that we don't have a drop-in service then does mean, of course, then that there may be a wait. Now, if you are symptomatic and you have pain, or you think you have, you're very distressed, you can, you can contact the clinic, and then they will try and get you in as soon as possible. But we cannot guarantee that you'll be seen on the day.
Okay, perfect. Thanks for talking me through that. And then in terms of confidentiality at STI clinics, are there measures in place to protect patient confidentiality?
Yes. So confidentiality is very important. For example, your STI notes, in James's, we have electronic patient records. So everything is computerized now, which is great. But only the people who work in the STI clinic have access to the STI notes. And you actually get a different hospital number in the STI clinic. So it's not the same one as you would have if you came in to the emergency department with a broken leg, or, you know, then that number will follow you forever. The STI numbers are separate to that. And so only the people who work in the STI clinic have access to the STI notes. So that's one way we protect their confidentiality. Secondly, then, you know, we don't tell partners, our parents, our GPs, about the visit, unless we have permission from the from the index client. However, there is a proviso that we have to make for people who are under 18, because the child protection guidelines mean that, say, for example, if anybody attends who's under the age of 15, then we have to report that to TUSLA, because even though the legal age for sex is 17, you're still considered a minor until you're 18 when you're an adult. So we have to make sure that there is no question of harm or sexual abuse for the people. So if we have any suspicions, then we are obliged to report that. So we have to make a report to TUSLA if the person is under 15 and having sex, even if it's consensual. If the person is aged 15 or 16 and having sex with someone who's at least 2 years older than them. Okay, so we're not out to criminalize teenage sexuality or sexual activity, but you do have to protect the young person. So the only time then that there are under the Criminal Law Sexual Offences Act, it is illegal to have sex with somebody under the age of 17. However, if the young persons concerned are between 15 and 17 years of age, so if they're in a consensual sexual relationship, if the age difference is not more than 2 years, if there is no material difference in their maturity or their capacity to consent, so that is key as well, and if there is no intimidation or exploitation of either person within the sexual relationship, and if the young person's concerns state clearly that they don't want it reported to TUSLA, but all five of those criteria have to be met before we can not make a report.
Okay, perfect. And then, so how can young people best protect themselves from catching STIs?
Well, the best thing they can do, there's no such thing as absolutely safe sex, except no sex, do-it-yourself sex, masturbation, wanking, that's safe. Most of us prefer to have sex with somebody else. So from that point of view, we can only talk about safer sex, which is condom usage. Okay, so the key thing would be condom usage. Secondly, it's reducing the number of sexual partners that you have. The more sexual partners you have, the more likely it is that you will pick up an infection, because you'll be exposed to a greater number of opportunities for infection to be transmitted. And of course, we need to look at our drug and alcohol intake. That's a huge thing. Because the decisions that we make when we're sober are not necessarily the same decisions that we make when we are on the tear.
So, Anne, you have told us there that there's no such thing as 100% safe sex. What would your advice be then around condom use?
Well, condom usage is safer sex. So you're right. There is no such thing as absolutely 100% safe sex. But the importance of using condoms, male condoms, female condoms, and dental dams cannot be underestimated, because they will protect against most sexually transmitted infections, particularly big ones like HIV and chlamydia or gonorrhea, which can have such long-term consequences for your health. But it's also an important part in we're all responsible for our own sexual health and well-being. It's not up to the girls to be on, you know, the pill or the guys to carry the condoms. We are all responsible. And it's really important that when we're discussing what sexual behavior or action we're going to have with somebody, that condoms are discussed. So sometimes you'll hear people say, oh, well, I don't use condoms because my penis is too big. I love that, because a good quality condom will stretch to 2 foot long and 18 inches wide before it'll actually burst. And I've seen many penises in my day, but I've never seen one that big in a fella, that's for sure.
Right.
They also say that, you know, they mightn't like to use the condoms because it reduces sensation, but condoms are designed to enhance your sexual pleasure. There's flavored condoms for oral sex. There's condoms that have little vibrators at the end of them that will tickle both your fancy. It's just a matter of finding the condom that suits you and fits you best. And I'd be very strong in advising people, like, no condom, no sex. You know, if you are negotiating with a partner and you're talking about using condoms and they say that they don't want to use the condoms either because they don't like the feel of it, well, then it's a matter of finding the right condom for them. Maybe they mightn't, guys mightn't want to use the condoms because they might lose their erection during sex. But a female condom, if their partner is female, can be used in that situation. So a female condom basically lines the vagina, and so the penis just slides up in to the into the condom, and so that works very
Are they difficult to insert for a female? I'm not familiar with them myself. In terms of, like, I know how a male condom works, but how does a female condom work? Like, how do you put it on?
Okay, so a female condom is it's kind of like a long, narrow plastic bag. I mean, that's really what it looks like. It's not made of plastic. They're usually made from nitrile, which is a mammal substance. So the benefit of that is that you can use oil-based lubricants like baby oil or Vaseline if you want to, which you can't use on a latex condom. You need to use water-based lubricant. But what it is there is a flexible ring in the center of the female condom, which you bend between your thumb and index finger, and you slide it up your vagina. So it can be kind of like putting up a tampon without an applicator. You just slide the condom up your vagina, you guide it up with your fingers, but you must make sure that the end of the condom hangs down over the female labia around the entrance to the vagina, and that the penis goes into it rather than up beside it.
A YouTube video or something on that, because are they readily available? I haven't even seen them.
Well, they're not as readily available, obviously, as male condoms. I mean, a male condom you can get for as cheap as 50 cents, you know. I mean, you can buy a packet of 12 for less than €6 in some of the supermarkets. They're about a fiver each. You will get them in the pharmacies. They're not as widely available because they're not as popular. But you can get them online. And then the other thing that I would hugely emphasize is the use of a dental dam. And a dental dam is a piece of latex, square latex, that you buy in the pharmacy again or order online, and you place it over your partner's genitals. But the key thing is that whether it's oral, vaginal, or anal sex, the importance of using protection.
Okay, thank you for that. Really important topic.
Putting in jest, but also I think the key thing is that a lot of the time girls might be afraid to say no sex, you know, like if the guys are refusing to use the condoms. I mean, without a doubt, we are responsible for our own sexual health, and I wouldn't put myself at risk.
I agree with you there. I feel like we need to empower women more, because there is this kind of, I don't know if it's a feeling of like needing to please the man or whatever it is, but I do think that women kind of are a bit submissive in that way. Do you know, if a man says no, a woman might perhaps say, oh, okay, even though they want to use one, but they'll you know, kind of bend a bit on that. So I suppose it's about empowering people, education, and just standing your ground.
I think as women we have been socialized into keeping our partners happy, A recent study done by NUI Galway showed that 70% of teenage girls have sex to keep their boyfriends happy. And that's the main reason that they're having sex, which is absolutely frightening, because what about your own happiness? And I was giving a talk in school one day, and one girl put up her hand and said, well, I have sex with my boyfriend because if I don't have sex with him, he's going to go off and have sex with somebody else. So she was having sex with him to keep him, you know, to keep the relationship going. And I asked her how important was her relationship to her, that this was why she was putting his wants and needs. And did she really trust the fact that was he going to stay faithful to her just because she was giving him sex? You know,
that's crazy. Yeah. It's like, it's so important. I think in order for ourselves to be happy, there's no point trying to make everybody else happy. You have to make yourself happy first before you can make somebody happy.
Absolutely. And any sexual relationship should be a meeting of two equals, where you have empathy and consideration for the other person's enjoyment and sexual pleasure, as well as your own.
Perfect. Thank you for that. And then, so I like finishing these podcasts with a little kind of game of fact or fiction. So would you be okay to answer a few questions?
I'll try my best.
So my first question is, true or false, you can contract STIs from dirty sheets or underwear?
False.
And then, fact or fiction, you can get an STI through oral sex.
That's true.
It's true. STIs are related to poor genes that you can inherit. Is that true or false?
False.
Yeah, I think that's a big misconception out there, because I remember, I don't know if it was amongst my friends, but a few people were saying, oh, I heard, you know, you can contract an STI if your parents had one, if your grandparents, but that's completely false.
Well, no. We will have to just make a little proviso in that, Jess. You can be born. It's not genetic. Okay, so STIs are not genetic. However, you can be born with an STI if your mother has the STI during the birthing process. Okay, so occasionally, so say if a woman had an outbreak of herpes, genital herpes or genital warts at the time that she was giving birth, as the baby is coming down the vaginal canal, there is a risk that it could be, the baby could pick it up that way. If the mother has syphilis and she isn't treated before she's 18 weeks pregnant, the syphilis can cross through the placenta into the baby. But if you're interestingly, if you're born with syphilis, and maybe you don't know about it, and you grow up and you meet somebody and you're having sex with them, you cannot transmit syphilis sexually that way. Okay, if you're born with it. But okay, if you catch syphilis, you know, through sexual transmission, then you can transmit it on to other people. So that's an interesting one, but it's unusual.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. And syphilis, am I right in thinking, I'm remembering something about, can it lead to blindness if it's not treated?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Syphilis is a bacterial infection and it's fully treatable, curable with antibiotics. Unfortunately, with syphilis, most people don't have any symptoms. 50% have no symptoms. You might be lucky enough to have symptoms and then you do something about it. But what happens is once you have the bacteria, it can ultimately, you know, grow, multiply, develop, and ultimately get into your brain. We call that neurosyphilis. And that can cause blindness and deafness and confusion. And ultimately, it can lead to death. However, good news is that we can treat it and cure it. So it's just a matter of being tested. So that's why I'd like to, as well as emphasizing the importance of condoms, both male and female condoms, and dental dams, which is a flat piece of latex that you put up again if your partner's female and you want to perform oral sex on them, or if you want to do what's called rimming, which is if you want to stimulate somebody's anal area, that you would put this latex up against it so to protect you from picking up or passing on infection. But as well as that, it's the importance of getting tested regularly. We're not great as Irish people talking about sex. We love it and we do it and it is, and sex is great. But unfortunately, we don't talk about it enough and there's not enough education about it. Whereas if you have the importance of getting tested regularly, it's kind of like getting your cholesterol checked or having your blood pressure checked. So if you have unprotected sex with somebody, you should have an STI screen. If you have sex with more than one person, or if the one person that you've had sex with has had sex with more than one person, you should be checked. Or if you're in an ongoing relationship that you have been practicing safer sex and you want to stop using protection, have a sexual health screen. And if you're both clear, then that's okay too.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I feel like there is some sort of a stigma attached to getting an STI checked, I suppose, amongst women aged maybe between 17 and 25. There is that bit of taboo there, but it is really important to get checked and to be aware of the fact that there isn't always signs and symptoms. So
yeah,
if you're having sex with different partners, it's so important to just know that they're not necessarily going to have signs and symptoms. So just to get checked regularly.
And absolutely to remember, like we would have people coming to the clinic and I'd say to them, when did your sex last? And they'd say, oh, I can't remember, but I woke up naked next to somebody, so I just want to get it checked out. So the whole issue of drugs and alcohol is a key thing. It's about making responsible decisions about your sexual behavior, which we can't do if we're under the influence.
Do you think people are getting better at getting checked? I mean, you know, if someone has a cold or flu, there's no kind of stigma towards saying, oh, I'm going to, you know, check something out about that. But with STIs, for some reason, there seems to be this huge stigma towards it.
Yeah, and I think it is. Now, I'm a whole generation ahead of you, Jess. So I won't say I'm old enough to be your mother, but I probably am. And the thing is that in my generation, and certainly in my parents' generation, you know, it was a much more theocratic society at the time. And there was a lot of taboo around sexual behavior. There was a lot of shame attached to it, which was totally ridiculous. And, you know, a lot of people grew up with a distorted attitude towards sex, seeing it as something that's shameful and dirty, which is terrible because we are all sexual beings who like to express ourselves sexually. And sex is fun and it's free and it's great. And I mean, we have so many nerve endings in our genital area. I mean, it's fabulous. We wouldn't have sex if it wasn't enjoyable. And, you know, it's so important that we get that message out that it is perfectly normal. And certainly things about sexual orientation and exploring your sexuality. But all of that too involves being respectful of other people's sexual orientation and their sexual relationships. and being respectful of yourself and partner and in deciding what you want to do.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I think there should be more awareness, and it's great to be speaking to you today about this, because I don't know the last time I've kind of talked to anybody about it. So it's a good topic to cover. So I suppose lastly, is it true that some STIs have no symptoms and can affect fertility? So it is important to get checked. So I suppose that's kind of summarizing everything we've talked about.
No, and I'm really glad you brought that up, because the commonest STI in Ireland is chlamydia. Okay, 62% of all STIs notified in 2020, that's the last year we have full figures for STIs. So 62% of all STIs notified in Ireland were chlamydia. Okay. Wow. And chlamydia is the commonest cause of infertility in Western Europe. And it's the commonest infection in Ireland. And for all of our listeners today, it is probably the one, if they're going to get an STI, it's probably the one that they're going to get. Because if we call chlamydia the silent infection, because 50% of men and over 70% of women have no symptoms. So if you're lucky enough to have a symptom, and I say lucky because at least if you have a symptom, you'll do something about it. The commonest symptom would be pain when you pee or a discharge. Okay. But ultimately, and then for women, bleeding between periods or bleeding after sex or painful sex, they could all be symptoms. And so it is really important to get it checked out. And the great thing about chlamydia is that it is fully treatable with antibiotics. You take one tablet twice a day for 7 days and then it's gone. And it'd be an awful shame to think that you couldn't have kids because of an infection you picked up in your late teens or early 20s, when you maybe try to plan a pregnancy later on in life, when it is so easily treated. But if you have the infection, it doesn't just sit in the vagina or sit in the penis. It's going to work its way back up through the reproductive tract. So for women, it'll go up through the womb, up the vagina, through the cervix, into the womb and out along the fallopian tubes. For the men, then the urethra, the water passage in the penis, it'll go back up through that and out along the vas deferens. That's the tube that carries the sperm up from the testicles. But the vas deferens and the fallopian tubes are tiny thread-like structures. They're about as thick as the lead in an ordinary pencil. So that's how tiny they are. And if they become infected, if the infection gets up that far, they become inflamed and they swell and they stick together. So then the egg can't come through from the ovary, or the sperm can't get up to meet the egg because the tubes are blocked. Or for the man, if the vas deferens is blocked, then the sperm doesn't get out, you know, much beyond the testicle, because it can't get up to the penis then to be transplanted, you know, for semen to be ejaculated into the
vagina. So obviously with all of these, prevention is better than cure. Is that
yeah,
true?
Yeah, absolutely. And knowledge is important. You know, we really need to be informed about these things. And like, it's great to see in schools and colleges now, they're doing courses, you know, it's all part of the RSE program. They're also doing consent, which is a huge thing. I mean, we haven't really touched on that today, but it's the importance of consenting to any type of sexual activity, regardless, you know, there's many, many different types of sexual practices out there. As long as both partners, that it's legal and that both partners have consented freely and voluntarily, then that's fine. But if there is no consent, then that's another issue.
Thank you, Anne. And thank you so much for all of that information. I hope everyone else found it as informative as I did. I learned a lot there. But unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. But thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Contraception and Sexual Health. We hope that this show has supported you in finding out more about your body and how to select the form of contraception that best suits you. You can find all the information relating to this episode on the mycontraception.ie website. If you think others can benefit from this series, please rate, leave a review, or share across using the social hashtag mycontraception. For further information and support, visit mycontraception.ie. This show is supported by Bayer. If you want to report a side effect or quality complaint for any contraceptive product, please contact your healthcare professional or report them to the Health Products Regulatory Authority via the Bayer.ie website.